from the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, February 7th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things started officially with
the Daily Datagram.
Yes, sir. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says here, man cannot discover new oceans unless he has the courage to lose sight of the shore. Wow. Amen to that. Yeah, see, it's the flooding onshore that has me upset.
Alert the troops.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the blogcast. Here we go.
Twisted History.
This will be good.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Big deal.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzing.
Well, kids, it was on this day in 1940, the second full-length animated Walt Disney film, Pinocchio, premiered. Served as a model for many political campaigns to come. And it was on this day in 1990, the Central Committee of the Soviet Communist Party agreed to give up its monopoly on power. They didn't have much choice, really. There were literally millions of Russian dissidents in the streets of Moscow. Needless to say, it was a smooth transition.
I got a bad feeling about this.
What was it the other day? Maybe yesterday. Maybe yesterday's blogcast. I can't recall. I was just ranting about Bill Maher. Now, there's no mistaking that Bill Maher is brilliant. And it has nothing to do with the fact that he was educated at Harvard. He was brilliant before he got to Harvard. Harvard, I have no respect for. I really don't. In fact, you can take those Ivy League schools, the whole lot of them now, and just shove them. Because they're indoctrination centers. We all know that. But I was ranting about Bill Maher and the fact that he just loves Joe Biden. And I think that what he's doing is he really wants Gavin Newsom of California to run for president. Now, Newsom says he's not going to do it. I don't know that I believe him. Because if I were outside under a blue sky and Gavin Newsom told me that it was a sunny, clear day, I would have to look up to confirm that. That's how little I trust Gavin Newsom. Did I call him Bill Newsom a minute ago? Anyhow, here is a classic moment from Bill Maher's podcast. He had on his podcast Patrick Bet-David. Now, Patrick Bet-David, when it comes to brilliance, wow. He's got even Bill Maher outclassed. And I want you to listen to this discussion.
Do you like Newsom? How do you feel about Newsom?
Had him on my show Friday.
I saw that.
And I first of all, I love him. Just you just like a guy or you don't. I've known him for a long time. He's done my show for a long time. Do I love everything he does as the governor of California? No, I don't. I wouldn't say I'm undertaxed. I have issues with this state. He's a guy. One reason I want him to run for president, well, is because he's obviously a winner. This guy could do it. It's insane that we have the guy, but we can't run him because we have to tiptoe around Biden. And
define a winner.
Well, he would win the election.
Oh, so
he would win the election.
So he's a talented debater, speaker, communicator, deflector.
And politician. And he's a smart guy. He's a smart, real guy with a pair of balls. Do I love everything? No, you never know what to do with a politician. But first of all, I think if he ran for president, it'd be great because it would force him to move to the center. Now you're running not just in California. Yeah. I mean, this is California. It's weird.
Are you a results-driven guy?
No, I like to watch things fall apart.
I mean, you wouldn't build a show that you win at the levels you won, you know, for decades if you weren't results driven, right? I mean, you're Bill Maher, you know.
What do you mean? What's the point about results?
That's exactly where I'm going with you. So results, guy.
Right.
What areas has Newsom won in? You said he's a winner.
Winner of the election. He could win the election.
But based on what, though? Do you want results? Like, what has he done to California to say he's a winner?
I don't know. It's too
Bill, you're a smart guy.
You know what? He made it rain. Okay, dude? It wasn't raining.
I saw when you said that. He said, great job.
He wasn't raining, and now it's raining. So he's got my vote.
Okay, you know what? Respect. I mean,
I don't know. I don't follow the news.
So here you have a guy who hosts one of the best shows on HBO. And if you are a leftist, if you're a liberal, you really like his show. And yet politically, the guy is dumber than a box of rocks. Did you hear that at the very end? I don't follow the news. I don't know what's going on. Well, obviously, because if you want any Democrat to run against Donald Trump, if you don't understand what Donald Trump is bringing to the White House, then probably you should never be left in a room alone with sharp objects. Bill Maher, you amaze me. How a person so brilliant can yet be so ignorant. Rachel Emanuel, writing in the Western Journal. I'm going to quote her here. She says, when 60 Minutes calls the situation at the border unprecedented, you know it has to be bad. True that. A shocking video shot at an unofficial crossing point. This was near San Diego, shot by the CBS show's crew, showed just how easy it is for migrants to enter the country through a gap in the fence that borders private property. Now, the 60-minute segment focused on Chinese citizens entering the U.S. illegally as part of a larger trend of border breaches, with Customs and Border Protection reporting apprehensions of 2.5 million illegal immigrants in the last year. Now, these are just the ones that we know about. How many millions are pouring through undetected? You always have to ask that question, you know? It was pretty obvious from the reporting that even CBS reporter Sharon Alfonsi was taken back by what she saw. She says, we were surprised to see the number of people coming through from China, nearly 7,000 miles away. Then the camera crew witnessed the organized and routine nature of these crossings happening right before their eyes. Bring on the cameras. Nothing to see here, just people pouring across the border. Groups of around 20 Chinese migrants would arrive every 30 minutes in SUVs driven by smugglers. Migrants would then walk single file through the gap in the fence, ducking under a bit of razor wire, but getting through. And at one point, Alfonsi helped an illegal migrant, pointing out a hazard as she entered the country. An armed Border Patrol agent stood just 25 feet away, but did absolutely nothing to deter the illegal aliens from entering. Now, the CBS team interviewed some of the migrants to understand their motivations. A 20-year-old college graduate said he hoped to find work in Los Angeles after making the 40-day journey from China through countries including Thailand, Morocco, Ecuador, and Colombia. 37-year-old woman decided to leave after harsh COVID-19 lockdowns that destroyed her childcare business in China. Others included a factory worker, a teacher, a banker, and a small business owner. Now, Alfonsi said last year, U.S. Customs and Border Protection reported 37,000 Chinese citizens were apprehended crossing illegally from Mexico into the U.S., and that's 50 times more than 2 years earlier. She said 75-year-old Jerry Schuster, a naturalized immigrant from Yugoslavia, owns the 17-acre stretch of land in California. And Schuster told Alfonsi he knocked on this door when he arrived in America. He didn't bust the door down to come in here. In other words, he came in legally. And Lord only knows how much that costs. If you know anybody who is now a citizen who didn't used to be, ask them how much that process cost. It's not cheap. She responded, well, you came in through the front door. He says, I came in through the front door. And then he added that these illegal aliens don't care. He says, they come through the hole like they're coming to their own country over here. And nobody, quoting him, nobody does nothing about it. Well, he told Alfonsi that it started in May when Schuster went to investigate smoke rising from his land. And he found groups of illegal aliens cutting down his trees for firewood and shelter. So in the month since, He said a constant flow of Chinese nationals passes through his property after making the short walk from the border fence, and he estimated about 3,000 migrants now trample his land every week. He says they come with the suitcases. They come prepared with the computers, just like they got off of a Norwegian cruise ship yesterday. And then he told a story about confronting a group of men chopping down his trees and burning them to stay warm. He asked them to stop, but local police arrested him instead for firing warning shots when the men surrounded him. They arrest me, they put me in the police car, just protecting my own land. Alfonsi explained how all the Chinese migrants seemed to know the exact spot to get in. Surprise, surprise. How'd they find out? They found out on TikTok, which, by the way, is owned by the Chinese. She said the Chinese social media app gives step-by-step instructions for hiring smugglers and detailed directions to that hole in the fence. So the reason these illegal immigrants are so confident about making the trip is that they're almost certain they won't be sent back. And they won't. Not under this administration. Alfonsi spoke to a Chinese immigration attorney who told her that even if the U.S. denied a Chinese migrant's asylum claim, China would refuse to take the person back, which we kind of know, and that's the way it's always been. And she reported that, according to the Department of Justice, 55% of Chinese migrants were granted asylum last year, compared with 14% for other nationalities. So, Ms. Alfonsi said 60 Minutes contacted Customs and Border Protection in D.C. and was basically told border agents don't have authority to stop people from coming through gaps like this one and can only arrest them after they've entered illegally. As for closing that gap, they said it's on their priority list, but would require money from Congress. Isn't that a laugh? Now, the procedures in place to handle these border crossers, as witnessed and recorded by the 60 Minutes team, reveal the absolute helplessness of Border Patrol agents. Illegal aliens receive detailed instructions on where to find smugglers who will help them breach their border, and instead of being able to restrict their entry, Border Patrol agents process them after they've already set foot on American soil. A short detention later, most are free to essentially begin their new lives within the very nation whose borders they crossed illegally while they await asylum hearings. This is not enforcement. It's basically hanging out a welcome sign. Come on in. The party is about to begin. The Biden administration continues to demand more money for border agents. But what good does that do when these agents have no authority to prevent the crime before it occurs? With 3,000 migrants a day coming in through just one little gap, the situation's now gotten completely out of hand, which is why even mainstream media outlets are finally starting to pay attention, little by little. It's not a great groundswell of attention, but at least it's starting to ramp up a little bit. Now that 60 Minutes has made a splash back on Sunday, well, maybe. But even if these migrants' intentions are good, and most of them are, this country can't take in the entire world. The very strong possibility that not all of them are here for upright reasons makes the situation even worse. President Trump, just the other day, cautioned, expect a terrorist attack. Well, I do. I'm sure you do. This year's presidential election is going to be a referendum on the Biden policies that caused this abject disaster. It's also going to be a referendum on what to do about it. But what I find shameful is the fact that our politicians in Washington could do something about it right now in spite of the president. And his policies as dictated to him by Barack Hussein Obama and his cartel. Our legislators could do something about it. And yet they don't. All you hear about is, well, we have to pass legislation. We have to pass legislation. No, you don't. Those borders are our borders, and they are borders protecting a sovereign nation. Unfortunately, our politicians don't treat this nation with any degree of sovereignty. Caden Pearson, writing in the Epoch Times, says that Special Prosecutor Jack Smith's office on Monday opposed a motion by a coalition of local and national news media seeking to intervene in President Trump's classified documents case in Florida. Imagine that. Now the news media wants to be part of the justice system, our two-tiered justice system. Well, prosecutors argued that the press coalition lacked standing and that their request to unseal certain court records, which might be favorable to the president's defense, was already addressed by a previous defense motion. But get a load of this. The Associated Press, remember Rush Limbaugh used to refer to them as the Associated Press, Obama? Well, the Associated Press, the New York Times, NBC News, and a few other news media, referred to as the press coalition in court documents, requested the court's permission to participate in the ongoing legal proceedings on January 22nd. Now, Smith's office, in Monday's motion, formally opposed the press coalition's request to join the litigation. They said they didn't identify any statutory right to intervene in the case. So all the time this is going on, I'm wondering, well, what about all those boxes of documents that we saw in Joe Biden's garage just a few feet away from his 67 Corvette? What about those? Why aren't we going after Joe Biden? The two-tier justice system, of course. So anyhow, the prosecutors argued that the press coalition's interest in the case is ancillary to the main proceedings. They seek transparency and access to information. But prosecutors wrote that interest fails to satisfy the standard for permissive intervention. And in any event, such intervention is unnecessary because the court's already poised to determine, based on submissions from the parties and the prevailing law, what information should remain sealed. Now, Trump's team already argued for the unsealing of the records in his January 16th motion. And Smith's office has already responded to that motion, supporting the unsealing with restrictions. Now, in their January 18th motion, prosecutors supported unsealing certain records so long as redactions remained. And they proposed redacting identifying information or any information that constitutes Jenks Act material for any potential government witness mentioned in the defense motion. But the press coalition also requested that the court conduct an independent review of the proposed redactions to instill confidence in the public regarding the administration of justice. What a crock of crap. Just remember this, my friend. Anytime you turn on ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, pick up the New York Times, Washington Post, you're picking up a media source that is politically and ideologically opposed to you. So their filing specifically noted that they specifically sought to ensure Mr. Smith's office met its burden of showing that its proposed redactions are narrowly tailored to serve the government's legitimate interest in the integrity of the ongoing case and are the least onerous alternative to sealing the entire records or the entire collection of records. Now, addressing this argument, prosecutors wrote that they had made it clear in their response to Trump's motion to compel disclosure that it fully supports full transparency of the record consistent with the witness safety, national security, and the court's protective order. Of course, this whole thing really is BS. It's BS from the get-go. This is all part of the larger project to prevent Donald Trump from being able to appear on the ballot in November. We all know this. Prosecutors also tried. I just find this rather odd that the prosecutors, the people trying to prosecute Donald Trump, are now at odds with the media. I find that rather strange. And they charge that while the press coalition asserted that it has standing to get involved in the litigation, citing more than a year of media coverage of the legal saga, their motion neither addresses nor establishes the elements of intervention. And both, in this particular case, are required. Now, prosecutors argued that there's no federal law that gives the news media unconditional rights to intervene. Certainly not in our Constitution, I can tell you that. And furthermore, they don't possess a non-statutory right, as the Press Coalition failed to demonstrate that their intervention in the case is necessary and that they're inadequately represented by the parties, according to the filing. What this really is nothing but a colossal display of media arrogance. That's what this is. And this is going to continue. There's going to be all this posturing between now and November. So we got 10 months to go on this. And it's all bullcorn. Monday night, we lost Toby Keith. And you don't have to be a country music fan to know who he was. He died at the age of 62. And this was after a pretty lengthy battle, a battle of a couple of years with stomach cancer. He had his family by his side. And the official statement read, Toby Keith passed peacefully last night on February 5th. So that would have been Monday night. Surrounded by his family, he fought his fight with grace and courage. Please respect the privacy of his family at this time. Now, earlier, I say this month, but back in January, he opened up about his cancer battle, revealing that he was first diagnosed in 2021. And he said, I was going through all the chemo, radiation, surgery, and I got to the point where I was comfortable with whatever happened. I had my brain wrapped around it and was in a good spot either way. Wow. And he praised his wife for being the best nurse, because she was around the whole time that he was under treatment, of course. Quoting him, he says, oh, she's been a trooper. She's the best nurse. The first time we went to Houston to the hospital, she stepped right in. She took control and said, we've got this. Let's go. So she's like, we're going to get this, and don't worry about it. But in June of last year, he spoke with the Oklahoman that he'd spent over 6 months undergoing chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery. The big three. And it's pretty serious when you go that route, when you have to have all three. And he first spoke about his cancer battle publicly in 2022. He said back last summer, he says, so far, so good. I need time to breathe, recover, and relax. I'm looking forward to spending this time with my family, but I'll see the fans sooner than later. I can't wait. He had quite a career. Spanned over three decades. Sold over 40 million records thanks to patriotic hits like Should Have Been a Cowboy. Made in America, courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue. I remember when that came out right after 9/11 happened. Wow. And his debut album was released in 1993. I was working at KILT Radio in Houston when that happened. And it was an excellent album. But he had kind of a, I don't know, he kind of came to blows with his record label because they were trying to pull too many strings, trying to send him off in a creative direction that he didn't want to go. So he finally just quit the label and formed his own record label. And he did pretty well with it, churning out hits like Red Solo Cup and I Want to Talk About Me, which was a great tune. He knew how to bring humor to both his songs and his videos. He went on to release albums like Blue Moon, Pull My Chain, Unleashed. His other hits include Who's Your Daddy and As Good As I Once Was. That was a good tune, too. And then prior to launching his music career in the 90s, he worked in oil fields. Of course, you could almost see that on him. If you ever met him, you could see that in his build. He just looked like an oil field worker, certainly a former oil field worker. It's a shame, too, to see somebody that healthy, somebody who was that active, fall to something like stomach cancer, of all things. So most recently, he performed at the 2023 People's Choice Country Awards. That was back in September. where he got the Country Icon Award. 2006, he set up a foundation to help children battling cancer. Imagine that. You're a guy, I don't know, just strangely prophetic, I guess. I'm kind of at a loss for words, you know. Toby Keith, I always figured he would always be there, being this tough Oklahoman. Survived by his wife, Trisha Lucas, their three kids, Stanley, Crystal, and Stellan. He also leaves behind four grandchildren. But I think something else he leaves behind is a void in country music. Now, naturally, the kind of country music that he did was already fading away. I mean, right now, country music consists of just a hint of a hip-hop beat. And I'm not knocking it, because music evolves. Sometimes it devolves. But music evolves. And the kind of country music we're hearing these days is a far cry from the every song tells a story style of country music. But just as a personality alone, Toby Keith is going to be sadly missed.
I bet you never heard old Marshall Dillon say, Miss Kitty, have you ever thought of running away? Settling down, would you marry me? If I ask you twice and beg you pretty please, she'd have said yes in a New York minute. They never tied a knot, his heart wasn't in it. He just stole a kiss as he rode away. He never hung his hat up at Kitty's place. I should have been a cowboy. I should have learned to rope and ride. Wearing my six shooter, riding my pony on a cattle drive. Stealing a young girl's heart, just like Gene and Roy, singing those campfire songs. Oh, I should have been a cowboy. I might have had a sidekick with a funny name, running wild through the hills, chasing Jesse James, ending up on the brink of danger, riding shotgun for the Texas Rangers. Go West, young man, haven't you been told? California's full of whiskey, women and ghosts, sleeping out all night beneath the desert stars, with a dream in my eye and a prayer in my heart. I should have been a cowboy. I should have learned to rope and ride. Wearing my six shooter, riding my pony on a cattle drive. Stealing a young girl's heart, just like Gene and Roy, singing those campfire songs. Oh, I should have been a cowboy. Should have been a cowboy. I should have learned to rope and ride. I'd be wearing my six shooter, riding my pony on a cattle drive, stealing a young girl's heart, just like Gene and Roy, singing those campfire songs. Oh, I should have been a cowboy. Yeah, I should have been a cowboy. Should have been a cowboy.
Rest in peace, Toby. It was a good ride, just too short. That'll do it. Get out there, make it a wonderful Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
That's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.